Lecture 5. I get to know me. I get to know me. That's kind of an interesting concept. I get to know me. We all are faced with knowing ourselves one way or another, thinking about who we are, thinking about what it is that our reality is, our real self is. And we wonder, when we hear about who our real self is that our real self? It's easy to talk about, I get to know me, from the physical point of view, from the human relative point of view. That's a very obvious thing. And you think, well, I'm a good person, or I'm a bad person, or I'm a happy person, or I'm a sad person. Whatever the things are, we like to think about ourselves. But is that our reality? Is that the essence of who we really are? We all know, or at least we think we know, that we are divine. We think that we have come into this creation, we've come into this life experience to remember our divinity, to remember who we really are. Now, where did we ever get such a crazy idea like that? Well, the Bible gives us ideas like that, and also our parents. In their subtle way, they say, now remember who you are. Remember who the family is that you represent. Remember what this is all about, that you are a fine, beautiful, exquisite person who represents our family in a fine, beautiful, exquisite way. And of course, some families are not all that fine and exquisite and beautiful. Some families have a lot of hang-ups. They have a lot of skeletons in their closet. And they're afraid to have the world know about those skeletons. And so then they put on a facade, they put on a face, a pretense of something that they are, and they are not that. And the more intensely that a family tries to protect its past, the more intensely the family tries to tell what a wonderful family we are, what a good family we are. Now remember, you represent the family, the more rotten the family is. You can be sure. You can be sure. When a father says to his son, son, would you get my slippers for me, please? And the boy says, get them for yourself, Dad. You're strong and healthy. Well, son, I'd appreciate if you would do it for me because I'm just very tired. I had a very busy day, and I would just really appreciate it. Well, Dad, if you'd appreciate it, I'm just glad to get it for you. But if you were just having me be your errand boy, I wouldn't be too cool about that. Well, now, many fathers would take the kid and whack him and say, when I tell you to do something, you do it. When I, blah, blah, blah. But this father doesn't do that. He says, son, you do me great honor by bringing me my slippers. Thank you so much. And the boy goes and gets the slippers, and he brings them to his dad. I suppose you want me to put them on you, too, huh? And the dad says, well, that's up to you. But I appreciate anything you do because you're a wonderful guy. Now, the kid goes playing next door with the people next door, and the father says, oh, you're going to play with friends next door? That's nice. Have a good time. Have a good time. And then he goes next door, and he acts and lives just like he's been trained by his parents to act and live with respect for himself and for others. And so he comes back from playing over there, and the lady calls up from next door, and she says, what kind of children are you raising? And he has no doubt in his mind. He knows the kind of children he is raising. He doesn't think, oh my God, what's she going to say next? He says, good goes from me, good comes to me. What she's going to say next is going to just tickle me to pieces. And then she says, what kind of children are you raising over there? They come over here and they're so beautiful, they're so gentle, they're so caring, they're so tender, they put my children to shame. And the father says, well, I am blessed with wonderful children. They really are beautiful. He doesn't say, oh, I trained them that way. If you would train your kids that way, they'd be nice too. You know, but you don't do that. You don't do that. You just say, I'm very honored to have a son like that in my life. He is a wonderful boy. He is a fine young man. You see, the whole picture is clean. The father isn't just one way one time and another way another time. He's consistent. And so the children that come out of that household are going to be children who respect first themselves. And they have a right to have an opinion. They have a right to speak their word, even if it is contrary to what the parents might think they'd like to have them say. Why should I get your shoes for you? You know, because I'm very tired and I'd really appreciate it if you did. Now, you're my son, and when I tell you what to do, you go and do it or I'll beat your pants off, you know. See, many parents do that, you know. And then they wonder why their children are so obstreperous. You like that word? They wonder why their children are so intractable. They're so untrainable. They're so naughty to have around. They're not being naughty. They're just rebelling at being treated like dogs. Well, they, dogs are treated better than that. They're rebelling at being treated like something that is drug in out of the storm, something bad, something evil, something that has no integrity in itself. That's the word. There you go. They don't like to be treated as something that doesn't have personal integrity within themselves. You understand? And this is how we were treated by many of our parents. And some of us were treated with parents who had love, and they treated us with respect, and thereby we became respectful. Well, now, who is the real you you're getting to know? The divine you is a respectful you. The divine you is a loving you. The divine you is a you that is glorious and very good. And if that is truly who you are, everyone in your world will be that same way. People will not come up to you and act inconsistent with who you are. People will come up to you and talk to you and act with you just the way you are. If you are a lovely, considerate, gentle person, people will come up to you and be loving, considerate, and gentle. If you are a mean and hateful person, people will come up to you and be mean and hateful to you. Really. That's just the way it is. People are not always mean and hateful. They're not always loving and courteous. And so therefore, the people in their world are not always mean and hateful to them or are not always loving and courteous to them. But if you really get to know yourself, the kind of self that you'd like to be is that loving and caring self. Not that mean and hateful self. So, how do you get to know yourself? Well, the more I prod my inner self, the more I get to know me. The more I check in with my inner self, the more I look into my inner self, the more I seek within my inner self, the more I get to know who I am. How can you prod into your inner self? How can you poke into your inner self and look around, you know? Well, whatsoever things are good, whatsoever things are of good report, think on these things. And when you think on these things, then your inner self will start revealing them. Your inner self will start letting them be free. But if you don't prod them, if you don't look for them, they're just going to lie in smiling repose, untouched by you or anybody else. But when you begin to listen to your own inner self and act upon it, what you're doing is you're encouraging your inner self to be who you are. And your inner self says, you are good and very good. You are wonderful. You are thoughtful. You are courteous, you are kind, and all that good stuff, you see? So, when you start listening to that inner self, you start having that great experience. And that great experience is up to you to have. You realize that? It's easy for you to say, well, they treated me badly, I have a right to be unhappy with them. No, you don't. If they treated you badly, it's because you let a little bad thought get out of you, and they responded to it. So you had better dust off that bad thought. Let it go. The bad thought might have been, they owe me a smile, you know. I'm not going to smile at them until they smile at me. Well, it'd be a long time for a smile to come, because you wouldn't even recognize it when it comes. If you're going to live a harmonious life, you have to be a living example of what it is that you believe. Now, the child has integrity. The child has integrity with the father. The father says, would you get my slippers? And the boy says, why should I? Now, he doesn't mean, get them yourself, you old fat pig. Why are you asking me? I mean, what kind of a father are you, making a slave out of me and stuff like that? Now, that's not what he meant. He just meant, why should I get them for you? Now, truly, if a boy is that old and he is at that age that he can speak so well and say, why should I get it for you? He should also have been trained to be loving and kind and courteous and considerate too, right? I mean, by that time, he should really be there. But for our story purposes, he is being outspoken like he is there. And is that bad? We sometimes think that that's bad, to be outspoken. But why is it bad to speak up for yourself? Why is it bad to stand up for your own reality? Why is it bad when people say to you, you're a wonderful person, for you to say, thank you? Oh, you know, no. That's false humility. Thank you. That's the right answer. And naturally, of course. And then you might even say, I really apply my best efforts to being nice. I think being nice is a wonderful thing, and I practice it every chance I get. You see, when you have this sort of thing going on in your consciousness, you are tuning in to something very beautiful. You're tuning in to something very wonderful, which is you. Now, how do you get to know yourself? How do I get to know me? I get to know me by finding out who I really am. Do I have to tell other people how to live their life? Do I have to tell other people what they should do? Do I have to tell other people how they should treat me? If I am a living example of who I am, I don't have to tell anybody anything. They will respond to my own inner charisma. They'll respond to my own knowledge of who I am. See? They'll respond to the fact that if I like me and I treat me well, then they'll treat me well. If I respect me, and if I live with honor and dignity in my own life, others will respect me with honor and dignity. Now, say a person comes up to you and says, I understand that your name is Professor Suter. And you say, yes. And they say, where are you teaching? Well, I'm not teaching at the moment. I teach as a professor at large. Oh, wonderful. What sort of things do you do? I haven't time for you now. Please get off my back. Get out of my world. I have other things to do. I'm teaching at large right now, and I'm just a free student. Well, excuse me. I'm sorry all to hell, you know. And how would they treat you? They would treat you with disrespect that you treated them. They'd say, okay, go your way. I'll take this check that I was going to give you and help you with your program, and I'll give it to somebody else. You know, what the heck? That's the way you... But Gertrude would say to them, I am a professor at large, and I teach philosophy. I teach the philosophy of positive living. And I think it's the most wonderful philosophy in the world. I just really am so thrilled with it. Oh, hey, that sounds interesting. And how do you affect people's lives? Well, I'm sort of crafty right now. I'm working with my grandchildren, and they're kind of fun. But they also give me quite a tussle. Sometimes they make me feel like they should do things that I think they should do, and they don't. And then I have to practice my philosophy. I have to practice my philosophy by saying, my grandchildren always like to do things that please me. My grandchildren always like to be around me, and they like to do things that please me. My grandchildren always like to be around me, and they always like to do things that please me. Did you hear me? Did you hear me? Now, the person would say, well, that's just manipulation. Oh, no. No, I'm the creator of my world. There is only one world in this whole universe, and it's my world. And I'm number one. And my grandchildren are in my world for my enjoyment. People are in my world for my enjoyment. They're not in my world for me to be something for them. Well, you're a professor. You teach other people. No, no. I profess what I am. I profess it. I share it outwardly, what I am. And if anybody listens, good. If nobody's listening, that doesn't bother me. I profess what I am. Did you ever know what a professor was? A professor is the one who professes what they are. And if a professor doesn't profess what they are, they're a false professor. And are you a false professor? No way. You're a real professor. You live what you believe. And of course, that's all you can do. My professors in world history and in ancient history and so forth, and literature and what have you in college, they're good people. They're real good people. They lived what they believed. They so lived history. It was a living agency going on inside of them, and they were pouring it out to whoever was listening. And if nobody listened, that didn't matter. They were having fun pouring it out. They just lived it. You follow me? That's a real professor. That's a real sharer. And you're sharing with the world. And if the world doesn't listen, hey, you don't care. You're having fun. You're having fun. When I walk the path in the morning and I give a lecture to myself sometimes, I'm enjoying myself. I'm just feeling great. I think, no, so I don't have a tape recorder. Big deal. You know, it's for me. And for all these rabbits and squirrels and snakes, for all these stones and trees and bones, everything that's around me, it's for us, you know, for whoever's listening. And if people want to listen, if people want to walk along with me on my morning trail and hear my talks and things like that, they're welcome to. But I don't care. And if they don't want to walk, they don't have to. I'm doing this for myself. That's what, when you live it every moment of your life, even when nobody's around, then you really know you're living your philosophy. Then you really know you're following through on everything that's good and beautiful. So the more I prod my inner self, the more I get to know me. And I prod my inner self by doing what? I prod my inner self by questioning me. Now at breakfast in the morning, we questioned ourselves a little bit about the is, and about the allness, and about ascension, and about, and about a lot of other interesting things. And we were saying to ourselves that, now isn't that fascinating? Wouldn't that be something to ascend? Wouldn't that be something to live in the is, to live in the isness, to be that which we are? Wouldn't that be something? And then the truth came out that if we were doing those things, we would have no friends. We'd have no family. We'd have no feeling of being touched. We could still be alive. We could still be living in the family that we're living in. But if the family we're living in does beautiful things, which of course they would do, that's great. And if they didn't do beautiful things, it wouldn't disturb us. We wouldn't feel we'd have to put our 2 cents in. We'd just be like a walking, beautiful being that radiates love and confidence and self-respect. And everybody who comes into our aura, they immediately embrace this confidence, love, respect. Immediately. It's not a matter that we force them to, or that we are putting on a performance for them. We live it. And so everyone who comes into our world senses this beauty, this magnificence, and they want to have more of it. You know how that is. When you are around a beautiful person, you want to be around them all you can. And when you don't want to be around a beautiful person, now listen to this very carefully. When you know a beautiful person and you don't want to be around him or her, you can be sure that you're not having beautiful thoughts. Think of that. If you don't want to be around a beautiful person, you are not having beautiful thoughts. Because to be around a beautiful person, you have to have beautiful thoughts. If you don't have beautiful thoughts while you're around a beautiful person, you will dry up and blow away. You will become a flame. You'll become nothing. Because you cannot have beauty and ugliness together. Either the ugliness encompasses the beauty and destroys it, or the beauty, by the essence of its being, destroys, not destroys, but just evaporates, whatever you want to say, the ugliness. It cannot exist. It cannot exist. And this is true in any area of our life. Now, we talked about the isness. We talked about living in that state of the isness and what a wonderful thing that would be and how great it would be to be there. But you wouldn't think it was great. You wouldn't think it was great once you exercised the awareness of the isness as being your allness. You wouldn't think it was great because you'd be it. You would have nothing of a relative nature in your thought. You would not be thinking, what's mother doing or what's my son doing, you know. You might know what your mother's doing and know what your son is doing, and it might not be exactly your choice, but you have no feelings whatsoever about it. Because you are ascended from the relative into the absolute, or into absolute. And when you move from relative to absolute, you don't take with you all of those relative attributes, if you want to call them that, of judgment, of possession, of conditional loving. See, those are pretty tough things. They're pretty tough things. And they're both tough to let go, and they're tough to exercise. They're tough to let go of because we've done them for so many years. We've had them as ours for so many years. And they're tough to be around because we know it's contrary to our nature. Ingeborg, what is your nature? Now,
nature is divine.
What?
Divine. Human divine.
Fine. Now, I meant, is your nature to be loving, or to be hateful, or to be considered, or kind?
My nature is to be loving, to be considered.
All right, good. Now, if you were around anyone who was not loving and considered, what would happen?
That person disappears from my world.
Very true. Now, let's look at that
I pay no attention to that.
Yeah, that's good. But let's look at that from another point of view. When a person is around you who is not loving and considerate, what happens to that person?
It will take over what I express.
That person will no longer be unloving and inconsiderate. They will be loving and considerate, won't they?
Yes.
They'll take over whatever your feeling is. And if you join them, then you'll have two unloving and inconsiderate people. If they, whoever they are, joins you, then you'll have two loving and considerate people. I see. It's simple. Real simple. But it means we have to all the time be on top of it. Because if somebody comes in our vision and we see them beating somebody else, maybe a person kicking a dog or taking a stick and whomping a dog, and we say, don't do that, don't do that. Well, we shouldn't say that. In the first place, we shouldn't have had it in our consciousness. But since we had it in our consciousness, we just immediately say, peace, peace, peace. And when we say peace, all anger, all anxiety, all desire to hit is missing. We haven't taken anything away from anybody, but we have put peace there, which was always there. We have drawn it forth, you might say. And then that which is untoward, that which is not nice, stops happening. We don't make it stop happening. We just put peace there. What's the song and the phrase? Oil on troubled waters. Oil on troubled waters. What happens when you put oil on troubled water? Yes, that's right. The water no longer is troubled, it is no longer tremulous, but the water now is smooth. So when oil gets on troubled water, the water no longer is bouncing around and unhappy. So this is what it is. When you bring peace, you have put oil on troubled waters. And the water and the oil do not mix. The oil and water are separate. The oil eventually just drifts away to the shore or wherever it might go. And the water still remains its pristine self, perfect and clear and beautiful. But for a while the storm raged and while the waters were so tempestuous, the oil did its beautiful thing. Now, think about this too. Could oil be spread over a tidal wave, and would it cause the tidal wave to be nothing? The principle says yes. It'd take a lot of oil, you say. Yes, that's true. But the principle says yes. So if the principle says yes, pay attention to the principle and think how you would apply that in your own life. What are emollients? What are oils? What are oils on troubled waters? Who wants to give me one or two ideas on that? What is oil on troubled water?
The oil is
what is it relative to? What is another word that you might use to refer to the oil?
The oil says to the water, behave.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. In other words, words of peace are oil on troubled waters. Love is oil on a troubled water. The man comes home from work and he just was fired and he's so unhappy, he's so miserable. And his wife says, sweetheart, there's only one thing for us to do. Let's go out and have a nice big dinner and then let's go to the show and go dancing. But I just lost my job. That's no reason for us to stop living. Let's go out and have a ball. But let's go and have a ball, dear. All right. And so they go and have a ball and he forgets about it. And he comes home and while they're dancing, he meets his boss. And his boss says, sorry, I had to do that to you today, John. And or Joe or Henry or Paul, whatever. Sorry, I had to do that to you. And John says, that's okay, boss. You did what you had to do. But just remember, you lost a damn good man when you had to let me go. And the boss says, you know, you're really right. Would you mind forgetting it and come in tomorrow morning? And I'm going to double your salary. Because you're taking this thing so beautifully. You're just a credit to me. You make me feel so good. I mean, how I could lose a man like you on my staff. And his wife grabs her husband and snuggles him and says, you see, dear, you are wonderful. I told you you're wonderful, you know. And you see, that's oil on troubled water. Herb, you make some very interesting stories here. But it's true. It's true. When you are the oil and the troubled water for yourself or for anybody else, everything starts falling into place again. I mean, he wanted a job, he wanted a place to work, he wanted an income, and he wanted to be happy, and he really was not angry with his boss, but something happened that he got replaced. Probably the boss's son came to work, you know. And who knows why these things happen. But the value of you is known by who you are. And if you are a beautiful person, it will be so outstanding. It will be so outstanding that it will be recognized. But you see, he had his test. The man had his test. He was fired. Unceremoniously, without any ceremony, without any reasons, without anything at all. The boss says, well, John, sorry, I can't use you anymore. Here's your severance pay, your month's pay ahead and so forth. And I know you'll find a great job because you're a great guy, but sorry. And you don't say, but, boss. You just say, thank you, sir. It's an honor to work for you, and it's a privilege to be a member of this company. Thank you. And you take your pay and you go. And the boss says, what have I done? And then later at the dance, there you are. And you compliment the boss and so forth. And he says, I can't let that guy go. But this sounds like it's a too easy a tale, too easy a story. But it's the way it works. It's just the way it works. When you will not allow anger to control your life, when you will not allow unhappiness to be your cup of tea, and you stand forth always yourself, always your loving, gentle, wonderful self, you will always succeed. You have to. But if you don't succeed, it's because you're not practicing being consistent in being your divine self. Now you say, well, that fellow's just working on a job. What's divine about that? Well, what's divine about that is that whatever that man does, he does beautifully, perfectly, with all of his heart. He does it so that it is a success, whatever he touches. You say, well, why was he fired? That's not the question. The question is, what did he do when he was fired? What do you do, what do we do when any opportunity comes along for us to stand up for something? If someone puts a gun to your head and wants to shoot you, what do you do? Do you act like a scared rabbit? It is frightening, of course. And you just say, hey, what do you want to do that for? And the guy says, will you shut up? Well, what do you want to do that for, you know? As soon as you kill me, then the world's going to be looking for you as a killer. But you haven't become a killer yet. You only become a killer after you kill somebody. And you don't want that on your back. Here, the guy's going to kill you, and you're giving him advice on how to live his life, you know? And you're saying, well, it's an alternative. He might not kill me, you know, but he might kill you too. But are you so sure of yourself that you can talk like that when you're under that great duress, when you're under that great difficulty? Are you so self-confident that no matter what the circumstances facing you are able to stand up and be yourself and have fun? Well, who's having fun with a gun to their head? It's not a gun to your head. It's an opportunity for you to show who you are. Are you going to be killed? No? Okay. Then don't act like it. You know, it's no fun to shoot somebody who doesn't give a darn, you know. It's no fun to kick a dog when he's sleeping or down or dead, you know. You don't kick a dead horse, as the saying goes, you know. And the reason for that is you want some feedback. You want some response. And when the response you get is all strange and eerie, it shakes you up. It makes you think. It makes you say, well, maybe I don't really want to kill this guy. I'll go shoot somebody else. And then you don't shoot anybody because you have changed your attitude about yourself and your reasoning for doing things. Now, you say, Herb, you're going from the sublime to the ridiculous. You know, you get your job back on the dance floor and you don't get shot because you talk the guy out of it. Hey, more people have been talked out of being shot than you ever realize. Because a lot of people, this is not just something unique in one time that I'm telling you. This is something in the annals of history. Should the facts be known, it would be quite common. And I only say, should the facts be known, because for every one person that might tell the story, there are maybe a dozen, hundred, or whatever, who have had the story too and never told it. Never mentioned it to anyone. Why should they? I mean, do you think that you're wonderful every time you make a great accomplishment in your life? Now, Sylvia's in the business of practitioner. She's in the business of writing practitioner's letters, and Stefan is somewhat too. Now, they write down the practitioner work that they did that was successful. But what about the things that Christina has done? What about the people she has talked to and who have had healing at her word, at her thought? What about Gertrude? Gertrude is discussing with hundreds of people these things. She says, oh, I am not. Yes, you are. You talk to two or three people, and they talk to five or six people, and they talk to 10. Your word goes out like a ripple on the water. That's why Stefan has that little drip of water on his business card. It goes out, it goes out, it goes out, and reaches. And you speak your word, but you very seldom talk about those successful people that happen. Now, Patricia Shiftad in New York, New Jersey, whatever, she is calling us constantly and telling us about the people that she's treating who have instantly changed their life, changed their attitude, changed their world, decided to live. And now, she tells us. She's one who tells us. But think of the thousands who don't tell you. And think of the thousands who don't even think about why it's happening or how it's happening. They just exercise that it happens because that's their nature. Interesting, huh? Think about that. You're a master. Look inside yourself. Get to know yourself. When I push me away is when I want me the most. When I push me away is when I want me the most. Think of that. Every time you say, no, 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 oh, no, no, no. I don't want to go to a seminar. I don't want to go to do this. Or I don't want to, here. Somebody comes to the door and you know them. And you've dealt with them in the past. And they want to come in and talk to you. And you say, I haven't got time to talk with that loser. I haven't got time to talk with that deadbeat. I haven't got time to talk with that whatever you're going to call him. That's just the time it's necessary to talk to them. Because they have a blessing for you. They have come into your life, into your world, for that blessing. Now, are you going to turn down that blessing? Are you going to say no to that blessing and not talk to that person? But they're so... I talk with them every time I talk with them. It's a pain in the butt, you know? Okay. Change it. Change it. The person comes in. Well, what bad news you got today? Well, bully, bully, bully. The person walks in and you say to them, well, Fred, You look like you just won the sweepstakes. You look as happy as can be. I'm so happy to see you. You are a fantastic guy. And Fred, who had intended to be unfantastic, he intended to give you some garbage, he said, what? Yeah, you look just great. You look really fantastic. You must have been living right, you know, doing something right. Well, Fred wasn't sure how to take that because he had some problems he wanted to share with John. And so as he did this, what happened? He forgot the problems. He started thinking about what he was told about himself, how wonderful he was, how fantastic he was. Maybe it was spread on pretty thick, you know, but that's okay. Spread it on thick. Kill him with kindness. And by the time your conversation is over, you were in charge. You said you're wonderful. You said you're fantastic. You said you're the greatest, you know? And he starts acting like that. He starts reflecting that. Didn't you have some great experiences this past week? I just know you did. How are you doing with your wife? She must be a most fortunate lady to have you around. You who care and are such a sincere, beautiful person, you don't have to say the truth about them. You say the truth about them as far as you would say it about yourself. Whatever virtue you have, lay on them. Whatever delightful thing you'd say about yourself or think about yourself, lay it on them. Man, woman, or child. And you watch the miracles happen. They will love you to pieces. They will want to be with you under all circumstances because they'll want to be happy with you because you're magnificent. It's an important thing to think about. When I push me away is when I want me the most. Remember that. When you are trying to get rid of facing a problem, you know, when they say, when you have your work desk and you have the problems, the toughest problems, you put them right on top. You get them out of the way, and then you breeze through the rest of the day. But if you put the toughest problems at the end, by the time you get to them, you haven't the energy to be as classic as you can. So do them first. Do them right away and watch miracles happen. As I practice getting to know me, I delight in me. Truly. The more I practice in getting to know myself, the more wonderful I think I am. And when I think I'm wonderful, everything functions for me. You see, we really should get to know ourselves. We should get to know ourselves, who we are, and what is our game in life? What is our goal? Is your game, as I presume all of you are monks, and all of you are professors, and all of you are teachers, and all of you are geniuses, and all of you are God, and oh my goodness sakes, why not just live on your laurels? Live and enjoy who you are. But what are you going to do? As I practice getting to know me, I delight in me. Well, what is this you that you're practicing getting to know? What is this you? Well, it's a loving person. It's a person filled with joy and peace, a person who is filled with harmony and right action, a person who is just very special. Okay? What else is this person that you are? This person that you are is a person who is considerate and kind, a person who loves animals, a person who loves other people, a person who has very special vision. You have very special vision. You can see right through a problem. You can see right through a person's crying heart. A person comes up to you and they're crying away, and you say, well, what wonderful news you have to tell me today. Come on, get off it. I got a problem. Yeah, yeah. But certainly there are other good things in your life too. But I got a problem. Well, tell me about some of the good things in your life. Practice, practice, practice. And then finally they say, well, okay, the kid got off to school okay this morning. Hey, that's great. He'd been giving you a tussle for a long time. Now he's getting off to school without any fuss at all. That's great. And my wife made breakfast for me this morning, and she hadn't done that for years because she works another shift and she doesn't, she's sleeping when I'm up having my breakfast, but she got up to make it for me this morning. Well, hey, man, you must be doing a lot of things right. You must be doing a lot of wonderful things. And on and on. And keep the parade going. Keep the parade going. And when you do that, the miracles start happening. You love yourself because you're drawing out of the other person the best, even though they came to you with tears. And the other person thinks that you're the greatest being in the world because you're drawing out of them their own greatness. I have many people come to me with tears in their eyes. Many people come to me crying their heart out, using up my boxes of Kleenex. And it's a wonderful thing. But by the time I get done with them, and by the time they have talked to themselves with me, they're no longer crying. They're smiling, they're laughing, they're happy, they're filled with joy. But why? Because they learn to like themselves. They learn to enjoy who they are. They learn to realize that they're pretty wonderful people. Do you realize that you're pretty wonderful people? I do. As I practice getting to know myself, I delight in myself. As you practice getting to know yourself, you delight in yourself. Is this what you want to do? To delight in yourself? See, I get to know me when I delight in myself. I get to know me when I prod myself and I listen to my inner self. I get to know me when I push myself into the utmost of what I'm able to do. And then I say, wow, I find I am different from any of my creation. I am different from any of my creation. Well, aren't we all flesh and bones? Aren't we all mind and spirit and soul? Aren't we all exactly the same? And the answer is yes and no. When you created yourself as a human being, and you did, you created yourself with some unique aspects. How you put together your life and your goal and your dream for yourself is different than anybody else. You're a very unique person. And how you act upon that is very different from anybody else. The way Ellen lived her life is totally different than the way Gertrude lived her life. And totally different than the way Stefan lived his life. Each of you three people are so totally different. And John and Irene have similarities in that they like adventure, but totally different from Inga here. Inga had a lot of adventures. She did a lot of fascinating things. She's taken steamships around the world, and she has been in Japan, been all over Europe, been all over America. She's just been around. And she's had some great experiences. But they're totally different than yours. How many of you have had malaria? None, thank goodness. But she did, and she came through it with flying colors. She created Ellen working with her as her mental doctor, her spiritual doctor, and her physical doctor. And she came out perfect. You see, you say to yourself, wow, I'm different from any of my creation. And what you mean by that you're different from any of your creation, is that you are your own self. You are your own selected self of who you want to be and who's right for you and what's right for you. And that's great. That's great. But put a little wow in your life. put a little wow that you are different from others. But you're just exactly like everybody. Because you're the is, you're the allness, you have the one mind, you're just a clone of the reality. But you gave yourself permission to be wild and gregarious and outgoing and sharing. You gave yourself permission to create for yourself a body. You had certain parameters you stayed in. You gave yourself permission to create circumstances in your life. You gave yourself permission to create activities in your life. And each one of you have done it differently than the other. Anita lived just a couple doors from Gertrude. But Anita didn't care about Gertrude in the slightest. And Gertrude didn't care about Anita. They were just neighbors who might have said hello sometime on the street, but they had nothing to do with each other, nothing in common. They didn't realize they both were seeking the same spiritual path, but they were. And yet, they lived right close together, right nearby. And they didn't follow through on it. And that's perfectly okay. But can you imagine being in such close environs and not knowing, like JJ in the same cell as Douglas, from our records at least, and they didn't even know it, and they were both students. You know? Unbelievable. Now, our records showed that they were there. Now, they may not have been. But nonetheless, it is unique, isn't it? Even if the fact is that JJ went out of the cell into another one and Douglas came into the cell JJ was in. You know, how interesting that when JJ went out, Douglas came in. Got to keep the University of Healing in that cell active and working in that building, in that block. Fascinating, huh? Really fascinating. How do we know the wonder of all these things that are taking place and the magic of all these things that are taking place and how they're fitting into our world? But they do. We say, wow, I find I'm different than any of my creation. And that's really exciting. Are you different than any of your creation? You are. I'm different than any of my creation, and I got lots of creation. I tell you, they're wonderful. I get to know me, and then I can start really appreciating the wonder that I am. Do you get to know yourself and appreciate the wonder who you are? I think you do. And I think that's pretty wonderful. You're a fantastic group, and I love you. See you in a few moments with Lecture 6. I love you.